Good morning.
Good morning.
It is good to be here, and it is good to get to worship God with everyone. I want to thank everyone who's brought us meals recently, and who's given us gifts, and who's come and visited us, and given us cards. And I want to thank everyone for all the love that you've shown to my family as we've had this new baby. I appreciate that. And on the topic of love, tonight we're going to be having another family growth night, and the topic tonight is going to be about love. Several of us wrote down different goals this year about how we want to be more encouraging to people or have more people over or different sorts of things that have to do with love. And so tonight's Family Growth Night is going to be all about practical ways that we can show love to each other, what are some of the hurdles that we face in that, how can we overcome those, and all those kinds of things. So let's come back tonight, and as a family, let's work on how we can be more loving to each other. All right, this morning, we are going to begin a new section of our Leaving the Nets theme. Our theme for the year is called Leaving the Nets. It's based on how Jesus called his apostles and they dropped their nets and they just completely devoted themselves to him alone. And we've been going through the life of Jesus talking about this topic. But what we decided at the beginning was every few months we're going to put that on pause and then we're going to go back to the Old Testament and reemphasize these thoughts from an Old Testament character. And so this morning, throughout the month of March, we're going to be looking at the life of Abraham, particularly the life of Abraham and the faith that he had, looking at how his faith led him to have this deeper devotion to Christ, how this faith led him to all these things that we've been talking about this year of leaving his old life behind and completely devoting himself to Christ alone. This morning's, to open that up, this morning's sermon is going to be called Faith That Endures, the endurance of faith, the way that faith keeps us going even when things are difficult. One of the things that I really like about talking about faith is it's so visual. I like to visualize things. When I can see something, then I can understand it, and then I can start to try to live it. And faith is about seeing. It's about seeing the bigger picture, seeing what is up there, seeing how that relates to down here, understanding my life through seeing things that are unseen. And this morning is going to be one of those lessons where I hope that we can see our life more clearly. Where after this lesson we say, now I get it. Now I see what the Christian life is supposed to look like. That makes sense now, to kind of put that picture all together. Turn in your Bibles to the book of Hebrews, where we had our scripture reading, Hebrews chapter 10. We're going to start there in Hebrews. When the Hebrew writer wrote this letter to these Christians, it was a group of Christians who at first had started off very strong. You notice in that scripture reading we had, it talked about how you even accepted the seizure of your property and you went through all these challenges and everything. Apparently what happened was here was a group of Jews who then became Christians. And at first they were just zealous and things were going great, but then they started to be persecuted and things got to be more and more difficult. And as things were difficult, they started to have, as we saw, their property taken away. Sometimes people were thrown in prison. Things were getting worse and worse. And it was at that point that after a while, Christians started to get weaker. You know, it's one thing to be a Christian when it's easy. It's another thing to be a Christian when it's difficult. It's one thing to be a Christian when I get to go to the potluck and put a lot of food on my plate and get to sit around and talk to everybody. That's when it's fun to be a Christian. But when I'm in that challenge and it's a whole lot easier to fail the temptation and do the wrong thing instead of doing the right thing, that's when it's not so fun to be a Christian. They were at that point in their life where it was no longer enjoyable. And when you hit that stage, that's where it really starts to determine what's inside me. What's going to make me, am I going to keep going or am I going to quit? Well, in this case, a lot of these Christians were picking the quit. We see here throughout the book of Hebrews, the writer gives us different details about that. At one point, he talks about people falling away. At another point, he talks about people drifting away, which you can kind of picture what that would mean with this kind of more of a slow progression away from God. And earlier in the chapter 10, he talked about people who were no longer getting together with the other Christians, where it may have been because of persecution, because the persecution was so difficult that they they were scared to get together, or it may be that just as we've seen, they sort of lost their commitment a little bit, and as they were drifting away, that just never was, wasn't really important anymore. We also see, he talks about, later on, in the last chapter, he talks about some sins that are coming into the Christian's life, sins like immorality and covetousness. Sometimes that happens, that as Christians start to kind of fall away, they fall back into the way of the world, into the way they used to live, and back into sin again. So a lot of different ways that Christians just weren't living like they should have been living. So the Hebrew writer says, all right, here, I've got the answer to all these problems. Here you're having all these difficulties. Here's the answer. You need endurance. And to have endurance, to keep going all the way to the end, to have that endurance, what you need is faith. That's what we saw in our scripture reading that we just read. The answer to that is faith. Now, to us looking at that, we think, well, that kind of sounds sort of cliche. I mean, of course, if I believe more, I'm not going to sin as much. I mean, we talk about that all the time. He says, no, you don't understand what I'm talking about here. You don't understand what faith is. Let me show you what faith is. And then he proceeds to, for the entire next chapter, to explain, here's what faith is. And he goes through example after example after example, saying, this is what faith really looks like. And one of those examples, one of my favorite examples in there, is Abraham. That's what we're going to look at this morning. He shows us how Abraham gives us the secret of how to live a Christian life, that even when things are tough, you just keep going. Read with me Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8. Hebrews 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. All right, so this morning I want to dig into Abraham's life, understand what was this faith like, and how does that picture of Abraham look like us as Christians. Turn back to Genesis. We're going to start in Genesis 12. Genesis, when you go through those first few chapters, you notice several things. One is, there's a lot of genealogies in Genesis. There's all these name after name after name. These people were descended from these people. And within all those genealogies, as you're going through these different stories and you're tracing all this history through time, there's also a lot of sin. I mean, you have it starts out good with God creating the world, and then the people sin, and then they turn away from God, and God sends a curse on them. And then you get to the very next generation, and you've got another sin. With the next generation, you've got Cain killing Abel, and then another curse comes on Cain, and you start having, the world starts to look like this. And you continue through that, and then you get just a few more generations down, and you finally get to Noah, and then it says everything's so messed up that God says, I'm just going to destroy the whole entire earth, and it's going to be gone. And so we do that, and then we follow Noah, and you barely got Noah off the ark before you have this weird story about Noah goes and gets drunk, and then we have that problem, and we've got another curse. And then you go a couple chapters later, and you've got the people all getting together, and they're building this big tower, and they're rebelling against God, and God curses that. And by the time you get to chapter 12, I mean, you've just lost any kind of hope you have in humanity at all. It just feels like, man, what is happening here? Every single generation, it feels like it's just going further and further away from God, and God is just having to punish them and punish them and punish them. And then you get to chapter 12. And it's like you just turn this corner. And instead of all the curse, you have a new word. Chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. In the midst of all of this curse, God turns to this man named Abraham and he says, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you so much that I'm going to bless those who bless you. If anyone blesses you, I'm going to bless them. And in fact, that blessing, I'm going to make you a blessing to other people. And in fact, everybody on the whole earth is going to be blessed through you, Abraham. That's a lot of blessing. And can you imagine what that would have been like? How would you like it if God came to you and said, I've decided I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you so much that you're not even going to understand the number of people who are blessed because of you. Wow, that'd be incredible. And we talk about this in our children's classes a lot. This is one of the stories that we study over and over again. This is one of the key chapters in the Bible. This, all these great blessings. He's going to get this land. He's going to get this family. He's going to get this nation. Everybody's going to be blessed through him. All these wonderful things. But here's the important thing. Did you notice what happened there in verse 1? Before we got to any of the blessings, look what we had in verse 1. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. What was the very first word that God says to Abram before he can say any of these things about blessing? Go. That's where it started. Before you get the blessing, there's this leaving. It all begins with leaving. And that's where this all fits into our whole theme for this year, talking about leaving the nest. This concept that it all started before you get all these blessings, there's a leaving from where you were to this new place. Now here Abraham is in the midst of this culture that's sinful and all these curses here and there and everything. And in the midst of all that, before God says, I'm going to bless you, he says, I want you to leave all that. Leave all these things of sin and everything, and then we can start working on the blessings. And you know, that's a lot like things are today. You think about, that's how God works. That here God says, I've got this beautiful home that I'm preparing for you, but first, I need you to leave all the sin here on this earth. I've got all this perfection up there, all this stuff waiting for you, but first you need to leave all the sin here in your life down here. God always works with this leaving before we get the blessing. It starts with leaving. And so here, Abraham, I mean, God tells him, you need to leave. And he tells him a number of things that he needs to leave. Before he can inherit a new home, he has to leave his old home. Before he gets a new nation, he leaves his old nation. Before he gets his new land, he leaves his old land. It all starts with leaving this old stuff before he gets the new stuff. And God shows him a few different things. I want to outline three things that God causes Abraham to leave. One is his home. Think about on a map how far Abraham traveled here. There's a couple different ideas of where Ur might have been. One is over near northern, what is today northern Syria. The other one is way over in modern-day Iraq. Two of the possibilities, either one of those was hundreds of miles of traveling to get to the promised land. I mean, this is a massive journey, and we're talking about by foot or by camel or by donkey or something. I mean, not by car. If you add up all the places that Abraham went that we have recorded in the book of Genesis, all of the journeys, I mean, you may get nearly 1,000 miles of travel throughout his life. I mean, massive journey that we're talking about here that Abraham embarked on. So one thing was he had to leave all of the comforts of his home and go on this huge, huge journey. Massive commitment. Secondly, we see he had to leave his family. Now, the book of Genesis has a lot to say about families. You get all these genealogies, like we talked about. And chapter 11 gives us the genealogy of Abraham. It has his grandfather, his father, all the way down to Abraham. And then, as soon as we finish all that, then we get, all right, now, Abraham, you need to leave all that. Leave your family. That's a commitment. And then you have another aspect. Turn over to Joshua 24. This is one we do not usually think about because it's not mentioned in Genesis. It's not mentioned until you get all the way over to Joshua. apparently he also had to leave some idols. Joshua 24, verse 2, it says, "And Joshua said to all the people, 'Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham, and of Nahor, and they served other gods.'" You ever thought about that? Who were they worshiping way back there over in Ur? According to Joshua, it wasn't God, it was somebody else. Maybe that was one of the reasons why it was so critical for Abraham to leave his family, get away from all of that, and set up life in a new place. Apparently, he had some idolatry he had to leave as well. All right, so he walks away from all that. Back to Genesis 12. Turn back over to Genesis 12. It says here, here's a big key verse here. After God gives him all these promises, all these blessings, here's this big verse in verse 4. It says, "So Abram went." He did it. It says, "So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him." After God says, leave all this stuff behind, and this huge, massive commitment is going to change his life forever, it's never going to be the same again, and Abram went. He did it. Now, that's a huge statement. I mean, that's him leaving all the comforts, all the securities, all the things, the familiarities, all that. He leaves all that behind. He goes. Now, here's the thing. After he goes in this long journey, he finally gets there, takes him however long that takes him, finally gets there to the promised land. And I'm expecting at that point to be this great fanfare. Look, Abraham, here is your new house. And that's not what it looks like. Look what happens here. Second half of verse 5. "When they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place that Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your offspring I will give this land.' So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him." So he goes all this journey and gets this land. And there's some people already living there. I mean, it's not like he goes there and God says, "All right, Abraham, here's your new plot of land. You can set up your, build your house over here. You can have your animals over here. Here's where you can..." No, he gets there and says the Canaanites were already living there. If I were Abraham, I would feel like, what did you bring me all here, the way here for? If there's already people here, I don't even get it yet? God says, "I'm going to give it to your kids, to actually to their kids, to way down the line. I'm going to give it to your descendants. They're going to get it." I used to work for a company that had a website where they would let people list real estate, let people list vacation spots, so I could list my house on there and then people could come and stay there on a vacation. But there was a problem. They had a lot of fraud that people overseas would take photos of people's houses, steal some photos, put them on the website, collect the money from a vacationer, send the vacationer over to someone's house who was already living there, and the vacationer would show up and, there's people already here. Now, talk about a way to ruin your vacation. I think if I were Abraham, that's kind of the way I feel here. You show up and, what is this? Where's the promised land? How's he going to handle that? Well, it says he builds an altar. You don't read of him saying, "Well, God, this isn't fair." He builds an altar to God there. And then he journeys a little further, pitches his tent again, builds another altar. And the next thing is, as you continue through the story and keep going through Genesis, through this chapter in Genesis, through Genesis 12, you finally get to verse 10. And look what we have now. Verse 10. "Now there was a famine in the land. So Abraham went down to Egypt to journey there, for the famine was severe in the land." What happened now? He gets all the way to this land. There's already people there. And then there's famine. And so he has to go to a different land. Here's kind of my take on all this. To me, it kind of feels like the destination didn't really seem worth the walk. I mean, he goes all this way and he gets to this land where now there's famines, now there's people on the land. And as you continue reading through Genesis, it feels like it's just sort of a hostile environment to him. You get a couple chapters later, and Lot gets taken captive by some enemy kings, and Abraham has to go off and chase him down and rescue him. You get several chapters later, and you learn about how when Abraham would dig some wells, he'd have a problem. The people in the land would come in and steal the wells, so he wasn't getting the water that he needed. You get several of these instances where you just get the picture. It's kind of a hostile environment. All right. Here's what happens after all that. After you read through this whole big narrative of him living in this land, and after we're scratching your head and thinking, Abraham, is it really worth it? Back in Hebrews 12, Hebrews 11, let me just read one verse for you. There. Hebrews 11, verse 13, back where we just read, it says, "These all died in faith, not having received the things promised." Here's the way that all ends. He dies. He goes to this promised land. He has various challenges, doesn't inherit any, doesn't get a single inch of that land, and then he dies. And the Hebrew writer says, and he didn't get what was promised. Well, that doesn't sound right. I mean, that sounds like a horrible deal. And at this point, we have to ask the question. I mean, at this point, after we just look at this and we see, like, it just seems like a complete waste. He does all this, gives all this, gets nothing. At this point, we have to ask the question, why would anyone do that? Why would Abraham have made that big journey, suffered all that time, lived in that land, gotten nothing, and died? Why wouldn't you turn around and go home or say, God, I quit, or something? Here's the answer that the Hebrew writer gives us. Hebrews 11, verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Here's the answer. Here he's journeyed this foreign land, but for Abraham, that wasn't the final destination. For Abraham, he may have been living in this land where there's all these other people there, but the Hebrew writer says, let me open up a little secret to you. There was something else going on in his mind. He wasn't looking for Canaan. He was looking for this heavenly city, this place that God built, this city with foundations, this place that God had prepared for him. The Hebrew writer gives us this window into Abraham's mind that Abraham wasn't just thinking in earthly terms. If he'd been thinking in earthly terms, he would have said, God, I quit. This is not worth it. But he wasn't. He was looking for something better. He was still on his journey. And because of that, because he was still in transit, it makes him this great giant of faith. That here, everything he was doing was hanging by faith. I mean, if Abraham didn't have faith, he'd have nothing at this point. Everything he did was hanging on those promises of God, where God says, I'm going to give you a great land. I don't have it yet. I'm going to give you a great family. I don't have it yet. I'm going to make you a nation. I don't have it yet. His whole life was hanging from those promises. And the Hebrew writer says, that's what faith looks like. And because of that, he was willing to leave a city because he was looking forward to a better city. He was willing to live in a temporary shelter because he was looking forward to a permanent shelter. That's what the Hebrew writer is trying to show us here. And because of that, it defined everything that he did. Because he had that kind of faith, the Hebrew writer points it out like this. He says, verse 9, by faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. Living in tents. The Hebrew writer is using that to show this is how he viewed his life on earth. It wasn't worth putting down some concrete and building a big house and trying to stay here for a while. He looked at his whole life as being very, very temporary. That even though he's in the land that God told him to go to, he understands that's not the real way in. It's not time to lay down that foundation. It's time to just pitch the tent and wait a little bit longer before we get to go to the permanent home. That was his outlook. And because of that, it makes him this excellent example for these people that the Hebrew writer was writing to. Where these people, they're saying, I didn't sign up for this. This is difficult. And the Hebrew writer is saying, wait, this isn't what you signed up for. What you signed up for is coming later. Don't put down your foundation here, because what you're living for is something later. That's the kind of faith the Hebrew writer is trying to help them see. And you see that throughout Abraham's life. It wasn't just the way that he lived in tents, but the whole way he related to the world around him was that he understood he was in a foreign land. He was not a resident there. Turn over to Genesis 24. Genesis 24. This is much later, when Abraham has a son named Isaac, and Abraham is trying to find a wife for his son. Now, how's he going to find a wife for his son? Here he lives in a foreign land, is the way he looks at it. So who's his son going to marry? Look at what he says to his servant. He goes and sends his servant out and says, I want you to help my son find a wife. Genesis 24, verse 2, and Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but will go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac. He says, swear to me this, when you find my son a wife, you don't get the wife from here. Where do we get the wife from? You go back home and you get the wife from there. Well, so you're saying I should take your son back home then? No. Look at what he says here. Verse 5. The servant said to him, perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I then take your son back to the land from which I came? And Abraham responds with, absolutely not. Definitely not. We're not taking my son back there. Instead, she needs to leave as well. And there's so much more we can say about this story here in 24, but what Abraham really does here is, as he selects Rebekah as a wife, Rebekah has to go through that same journey that Abraham went through. She has to make the same commitment as well, that she has to leave her whole family. She has to go on that long journey. She has to come live in a foreign land as well. And he says, that's the kind of wife I want for my son. You see the way Abraham looked at this, for both his life and for his children's lives and their children's lives, he made sure that they all understood, we are foreigners. This is not our home. We are awaiting something better. We need to make that extreme commitment to leave that life and to look for the better life. Okay, that's the lesson of Abraham. Now, let's look at some application. Here's what we have. Let's talk about what this means for our life today. Throughout the scriptures, you have this same pattern of Abraham that we saw with Abraham. So many characters follow the same picture of starts with leaving, then goes to living in some kind of a foreign land, some kind of a temporary kind of existence, and then ends with a better home. You've got Abraham following that. You've got Moses leading the people out of Israel to follow that same pattern. Moses leading the people out of Egypt. He takes them out of Egypt, then they do the leaving, then they go and they wander in the wilderness. It's a very temporary kind of thing, living with this temporary tent thing and all that, and then they finally get to the promised land. You have the same story with the book of Ruth. You think about Ruth. She leaves her land, and you have that great statement in there about how your people shall be my people, your God, my God. It's just, I'm going to leave all everything that I have here. I'm going to come. And then you have the next couple of chapters are sort of this living in this foreign land, very difficult, very poor, very challenging. And then you have almost a fairy tale book ending where it ends with she has the great family. And it's almost like the life of Abraham played out with the woman now instead of with Abraham. You have the same picture with David. That David, he leaves everything, has to run away from Saul, gets chased around in the wilderness, things are very difficult. Eventually, he comes and becomes king and has the permanent dwelling and everything's great again. You have this picture over and over again until it finally culminates in Jesus. Jesus left his home with God, left the glory, came down to this earth, suffered, had all these challenges, as the Old King James tells us in John 1, tabernacled among us. It's this concept of living in a temporary kind of shelter, like his body was like this tent, is kind of the picture it gives us. He lived here, had all the challenges here, and then was glorified and ascended up to glory. Why do you have that same picture over and over and over again throughout the Bible? That's the same story that should be our lives as well. That's how we should live. That when you read in the New Testament, the way that Christ calls us, it's the same thing. When Christ comes and tells us to come follow him, it's the same picture. That Christ talks about how whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. That don't be attached to the things here on this earth. Leave all the distractions, all the sins, all the things that are holding you back here on this life, and come follow me. But then when we start following, we find out it's not, this world's still not our home. When you think about moving, what's the worst thing about moving? To me, it's the moving part. I mean, once you get to the new house, then everything's great. But the packing, and then driving the truck, and then the unloading, that's not the fun part. But it's like here, when Christ calls us, he says, hey, I've got this new home that I've prepared for you. So we say, all right, I'm excited. And we pack up all our stuff, and we load the truck, and we're ready, and we get on the road, and then Christ says, but not yet. You got to wait a little bit. All right, well, we just left our house. Where are we now? So we just kind of drive our moving truck around for the whole rest of our life. And that's kind of the picture of the Christian life until we finally get that home. It's like the whole life is in transit. Like our whole Christian life is just waiting for our other home, and we don't have a place to live. We don't have a home. We don't have a house. We're just kind of here. We're not really residents. We're just kind of foreigners. We just don't really belong here. We're waiting on something else. Christ says, that's what the Christian life is like. And turn over to, or you can turn over there if you want, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1. There's one verse I want to read there. Think about Paul, the example that he sets. And Paul was the guy who got this. Paul was so completely committed to Christ, all the things that he went through, all the things that he gave up. And the way that he describes his life is like this. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1. For we know that if this the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Paul describes his body like a tent. And he says, you know, if this tent gets destroyed, well, that's okay. I've got a home up in heaven. Same exact principle as Abraham. The way Paul lived his life was not like he had a house, but like he had a tent. His body was just a tent. Just live here for a little bit until we're done camping, and then we get to go and live in our real house. That was his perspective. And that needs to be our perspective as well. We need to have the commitment to leave everything, then to live as foreigners, looking forward to the home in heaven. All right, let's finish with this. Here's how we mess that up. Here's how this gets messed up a lot with Christians today. Three different things. One is that we fail to leave. That I may say I became a Christian, but I never made the commitment to begin with. That I'm still right where I started from. I'm still doing all the same things I used to do, having all the same friends I used to have, saying all the things I used to say, talking the way I used to talk, living the way I used to live, all those things. There was no leaving. That's not going to work. Second area that we mess up is that we do the leaving, but then we find an opportunity to go back, find a reason to return. The Hebrew writer pointed this out in verse 15 of Hebrews 11. He says, if they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had an opportunity to return. You can see he's kind of probably nudging the Christians a little bit who are doing exactly that, who are falling back away. And he's saying, no, that's not how it works. Abraham did not go back to the land that he started in. He stayed in this new land. But oftentimes Christians, when things get tough, the temptation is for us to try to go back. He writes that that's not how it works. But here's the third one, and here's the one that I think happens probably the most often, it's the most dangerous, is that instead of living like that in the foreign land with a tent,
Instead, I live more like this. I start to make this world my home. You remember who went with Abraham on his journey? Who was it that also journeyed with him? Remember his nephew Lot? Lot comes along with him. And Lot's story is similar to Abraham's. He starts off very similarly in that he starts off very well. He's there, he's living in tents, going along with Abraham. And then what happened? Remember that famous verse? Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom. Pitches his tent a little bit closer to the world. And then you get a few chapters later, and where do you find Lot? He's not living in a tent anymore. Where is he living? In a house in the city of Sodom. Somehow he went from being a foreigner to being a resident. What happened? Maybe it happened over time. Maybe it happened rather suddenly. But somehow, it's not a tent. And then we find out his daughters, they're getting married. Who are they getting married to? These guys in Sodom. Completely the opposite of the way that Abraham raised his family. So here's the problem. A lot of times, we start to look more like Lot than like Abraham. Where we may have left initially, but then we kind of got comfortable here, and this life seems pretty nice, and we start putting down the foundation and living here, and it becomes more and more about here, and we begin fitting into this culture more, and we're not foreigners anymore, and nobody sees us as any different because we're just a part of this whole group here in this world. That's not good. All right, so here's the solution to all of this. We need to have the kind of faith that gives us endurance. We need to have, as Christians, the faith like Abraham. For one, we see that we have to leave. We see the need to leave all that old life behind, get rid of all that, and make a commitment to follow God, and then live like we're foreigners, live like we don't belong here. That's what the Christian life looks like, and we can only accomplish that through faith, when we're looking to the reward. If you're not yet a Christian, then we invite you to come forward and put your faith in Christ, to trust in Him, come and be baptized into His blood, and live that new life that is looking forward to that ultimate home with Him in heaven. If you're subject to that invitation, then please come forward while we stand and we sing.